Life Audio.
And on Skype, 3, 2.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, we've got some interesting things to talk about today, including a breakthrough that I had in my office, in my academic ivory tower, thinking things through, like drawing lines from things to things, like pieces of yarn, kind of beautiful mind stuff regarding a new metric, a new kind of flagship statistic for reformdom, and I want to get into that, but first, let's take a break. All right, boys, we're back. Paid some bills. I want to talk stats with you guys. So Piper, I don't know how long ago it was, probably around the Moneyball era, OPS, on-base plus slugging, kind of became the flagship stat for baseball. And it's kind of the metric that everybody uses to like decide if a guy's any good or not. I came up with one for reformdom. It's pretty simple. It's pretty elegant. I'm trademarking this. This is my intellectual property. No one else outside of the program here can use this. And it's books plus kids, BPK. So the number of books that you've published plus the number of kids that you've produced, that's the number, right? That's the metric. So for example, the K part for me would be low, right? So I only have two kids in reformdom. That's shameful. Not great production there.
Clearly a progressive Christian. That's what you are. Only two kids.
Yeah, clearly, if anyone knows me, that's definitely how I roll. So only two kids, but a lot of books, a heck ton of books. So I'm making up for it. I'm like the hitter Pipe that like strikes out every time, but when I make contact, I hit a home run.
Right.
So that's kind of what I'm bringing to the table. A lot of books. Low on the kids, but my overall like BPK would be pretty solid. Yeah, so what do you guys think of my metric? What do you think of my new reform stat? Pipe, does this thing have legs? Does it compare to OPS for you?
It does. You know, there's I like all statistics, so there's other things you want to bring in, you know, in terms of like, well, what about this statistical anomaly? Because I think about somebody, you know, you think about somebody like Kevin DeYoung, and you're like, well, he's got like 30 kids and 30 books, and he's
clearly a freak,
par excellence, yeah, reformed guy. I mean, yeah. Then you got like Tim Keller, who I don't know how many kids he has, maybe two or three, but like
you never hear about him.
But like a book every 5 minutes, and his books will continue to be published long after he passes because
in perpetuity.
You know, Jared Wilson, two kids, a book every 7 minutes. So. Strong. Yeah. You know, he's the
Jared and I are kind of in the same we're in the same tier that way, the same OPS tier in terms of like none of the books do very well, but they're consistent. There's a lot of them.
Yeah. And, John Piper
kind of wins it.
Piper, five kids and more books than anybody can count. So again, super reformed. So I have two questions about the statistical anomaly. I think Ronnie needs to speak into this. What do we do with people who have ghostwriters? So like Matt Chandler, I think four kids and a bunch of books, but like he didn't write any of them. Does Jared Wilson?
We'll get into some Matty Chan kid stuff later, but yeah, keep going.
So the ghostwriter. Okay. So how do we adjust for that? And then we got somebody like Ronnie Martin, who is one kid, not a huge number of books, but advanced degree pursuit, which I feel like
a lot of tweets too.
Yeah. A lot of
Twitter production.
Yeah, a lot of writing production for sure. And, you know, obviously a lot of songwriting and things like that. So how do we weigh this statistic to account for other people writing your books or you putting in your investments elsewhere besides, you know, just book publication? Ronnie, I feel like that I posed the question about you, so it should probably go to
Well, I mean, you know, boys, to be fair, I mean, by this time next year, I will have nine books out. That's not no books. I mean, that's something, right? That's some books, right?
I was comparing you to like, you know, Kevin DeYoung on the, or like, or Jared, where there's that many books to outweigh the, you know, the minimal child.
Yeah,
production.
No, I get it. I mean, and you know, so, I haven't been writing books as long as Jared C. and Kevin either. So, I, you know, maybe someday I'll catch up. I can't catch up with the kid thing. So I'm already, that's already passed. That's done. I don't know. It's it's kind of funny because it's, you know, like I'm in a network where there's a lot of pastors and wives who are, you know, they're having a lot of kids, and it's part of, maybe this is taking us down another trail, but like, it's part of like, it's definitely part of a particular kind of, I don't know, like theological philosophy that, you know, they, and again, some of them are more reformed than others. So some of them are not going to be all Kevin DeYoung about it, but they definitely want to have, they want to be fruitful and have big families. And so to find a family, honestly, that has one or two kids is just super rare, you know? And then, and honestly, it's, this is so funny because, you know, the one thing you're not ever allowed to do is ask somebody why they only have the number of kids they have. But when you're a bit of an anomaly and you only have one, right? And it's like, it's mind blowing to me. I've had literally people ask me like the most personal question in the world about why I only have one child. And I just look at them and I go, you know, I don't know that I can get into that with you right now, you know?
I think that dovetails with the reformed lack of social skills. I think that's where that Venn diagram overlaps.
So nobody's going to say, hey, you spend an awful lot of time writing books, recording podcasts, and making albums. They want to get straight to the part about, hey, you didn't really produce very well on this other side of your life. And it's like, okay, well.
Yeah, like the one where you make people, so it's, you know.
Well, right, you didn't make enough people. And somehow it's like, dude, that can be, there can be 15 different reasons why that is, 14 of which are maybe the most painful thing in the world, but they feel okay to ask about that.
Oh, for
and,
sure. Yeah.
And by the way, it's not just me in this picture, it's my wife. So I'm supposed to just be able to like sort of have to talk about, you know, some of the things that would be very personal to her. and it's like, but you never want to ask about, hey buddy, what about all the time you're spending, you know, on the laptop typing away those words, you know?
Well, you'd never ask somebody like, hey, how much money do you make? Like, how well do you do financially?
I would say it's even, like, you should ask that question before you ask why somebody has not had had the children they have.
Dude, let me,
yes.
Let me tell you a funny story from when I first joined DeYoung's church. So this is going back way, way, way long ago. And we were kind of in this, like, I don't even think we had a kid yet. But we were kind of hanging around in the young couples crowd. And there was a camping trip, and we got invited on it. So we're like, ah, oh, cool. This will be fun. Go camping with a bunch of camping's miserable. I hate it. But go camping with a bunch of friends and just hang out, chat, have fun. So we everybody sets up their campsites, and we get around the fire that first night. And there was one lady who was kind of the ringleader, and she's like, all right, we're going to talk about our theologies of birth control.
Sweet.
And like, this was the topic of conversation. And I look at my wife and I'm just like, oh my gosh, what's happening? Like, this is
like
a bizarre
headache
trip.
Let's go home.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a bad dream.
Let's go home. Yeah. Right.
All right. I have a question.
It was
guys.
Like a bad dream.
So how much of this, so you said it, you know, it overlaps with the Venn diagram of reform, lack of social skills. That is 100% accurate. How much of it is because Reformed people have turned kids into a theology instead of, like, I don't know, family? You know, there's, it's you know, kids are a mission instead of, like, I don't know, a whole human. And so it's similar to asking, like, are you a 4 or 5 point Calvinist in some people's minds, which is also a weird and stupid question. But in their minds, like, number of kids really is a metric of sort of missional output or something.
Yeah. Well, I want to hear you on this, Ron, from a pastor's perspective, because I think your take might be a little different. But I think, to me, Pipe, it sort of hits on two levels. One is the reformed obsession with kind of having a take on everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, you take a thing, whether it's free time or alcohol or what, or number of kids or whatever, and you've got to have a very well articulated, or at least heavily articulated, position on
literally everything.
It's a good
distinction. Literally every single thing there is has to be articulated. So I think it's that, but I think it's also like, the sort of elegant workaround in terms of evangelism. Like, if I make 12 people and theoretically they all become believers, then I've kind of like checked the evangelism, you know, go make disciples box that the rest of us are kind of flogging away at out in the world. You know what I mean? Does that make sense at all, Bigar?
Yeah. Are you asking what's the compulsiveness behind needing to always like,
yes. / do you think reform people use having a bunch of kids as their way of like gaming, having the,
I mean, dude, that's, it's really a great question, man, because there has to be something. I probably haven't explored it enough because, again, you know, father of one, but you know, there has to be a tie-in with that just in the sense that, you know, so here's the thing. If you have a big family, it also gives you a particular kind of authority on what it looks like to do a bunch of different things. Well, like if you're a father of 10, as opposed to a father or mother of one, technically speaking, you know, people should go talk to you about what it's like to raise a big family. Right. And then what are the, what are all the offshoots of raising a big family leads to? Well, you really got to have your finances down and you really got to know some things about planning. And so I think it's just like anything else. If you do something on a bigger scale, it kind of puts you in the place of authority about all kinds of other things that you may not have like a clue about. It's why we always go to big church pastors to get all of our leadership and all of our you know, our sort of our know-how and our knowledge and our wisdom about everything, where we'd never consider a guy that's been faithful in a church of 40 people who might kind of know some things about some things, right? It's just we always go to that size metric, and I would imagine it's the same thing. You know, and again, let's qualify. We're not there, you know, have a big family. That's awesome. And I believe that. And that's great. So I don't want to tint this the other way because we're all fathers of, you know.
Yeah.
I
mean, we have five combined kids. So, families, you know, that is one row in the homeschool family bus.
It's tiny. It's the tiny house version of, you know, reformed books and kids.
What's funny about what you just said, Ronnie, about tiny size metric, you know, we talked about it a lot regarding church and like, you know, there's a preponderance of evidence that church size has nothing to do with, you know, ministry effectiveness. I think the same is true for families. I have known an enormous number of large families because I'm reformed. You know, I grew up around homeschool families and, you know, fill the earth and subdue it families and whatever else. There is no correlation between number of kids and you don't improve as a parent with every kid. There are some horrendous parents of large families, and you know, and then some who are fantastic. You know, it's such a different ballgame because, you know, I have two kids, which means I can give a significant amount of time to each kid personally. When you have eight kids, it's, you know, you parent differently, but why the large kind of the more kids makes you more of a parenting expert thing. Like, maybe it's just more evidence. Like, there's another piece of evidence that you're not doing a very good job. You know, you have five kids you're letting down instead of two. And that sounds really mean.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about all large families. I'm simply talking about all parents. There are good and bad parents. Looking to the parents of large families as the parenting expert seems ridiculous, frankly.
Well, yeah, just by virtue of having multiple children, that has nothing to do with, you know, sort of, you know, the qualities we would say of being a good parent, right? I mean, you can be a bad parent with one kid as much as you can be a bad parent with 10 kids. We're talking about something that's more intrinsic than it is based on the experience of having a large family. Now, certainly they're going to have an experience that I lack. I mean, honestly, when I have people with large families that come to me and they want to talk a little bit about parenting advice, I mean, there's general principles in place that I think apply no matter what. But when they start talking about like details about, well, here's, you know, when we do this and we do that, I almost have to go like, well, yeah, that's a great question. But I think it more has to do with like practical matters that I grew up in a larger family. I didn't, you know, produce a large family. So I don't really know. So you might be better off talking to somebody else about some of these things. You might be better off talking to Kevin DeYoung. I love how he's just like, there's only one dude that has a lot of kids and his name is Kevin DeYoung. Like, that's it.
There's actually so many dudes. And I actually want to. I want to give the caveat too that I'm not angry about this at all. Like 100%. I'm 0% angry about it. I used to be super angry about it. Full disclosure, but I'm not anymore. I haven't been for a long time by God's grace. But it is just a funny thing about our subculture, and as you guys alluded to, I mean, there's good and bad in it, right? There's so much good in it, and there's a good bit of bad in it, and that's for the Lord to decide probably which is which and not us. But let's take a break, boys, and then we'll come back and talk about a Karate Kid thing. All right. I don't remember who sent this picture to the group chat. Was it you, Pipe, or Ram?
Yeah,
was it you?
I think it was me.
The Maddie Chan pic. Okay, so you sent a very provocative picture, very intriguing. And it was a picture of Maddie Chan, Matt Chandler, Reformed's favorite frat boy.
Who did
from
not
the
write
South.
The foreword for our book, by the way.
Or his
who
own
did not
books.
Write the foreword for our book. Someone else did their legwork on that, the actual writing. But he does do his own karate. There's no stunt double in the dojo of Matt Chandler. And I know this because you sent me a picture of Maddie Chan, all 6 feet eight of him or whatever he is, in a dojo. He's wearing a gi, and he appears to have a black
sensei.
Belt.
Yeah.
And the coach, what do they call that guy? The sensei.
I only know that because of Karate Kid, obviously.
Well, exactly. So it's Chandler, the sensei, and then this young dude with like a 99th percentile mane of hair. Just a tremendous mane of hair.
That was Big T.
Why would I know who Matt Chandler's kid is? Like, seriously, this is a weird pathology. Like, why the bleep would I know what? I've never met Matt Chandler.
Well,
I've never read word one of his books. I know nothing about this person.
Photos, you know, of his kid, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm not seeing them, you know, and it's weird. Okay, so let's actually do a minute on that. I want to do a minute on this weird, and you guys both, I think, will have perspectives on this. This, like, not really famous, but semi-famous, or at least famous in my own mind, enough to sort of have a presence. I feel like if I was a real famous person, I would not post pictures of my kids. I wouldn't want the world sort of interfacing with some version of my
you
kid.
You wouldn't want anybody
the
to
way
do
that
what
we're
doing,
doing it on the program.
Right,
I wouldn't
moment.
Want that to happen. Exactly. Oh, yeah. Where are you guys at on that? I guess I'm not very articulate right now, but that's what I think.
Our understanding of fame in the Christian world is, you know, it all is sort of big fish, small pond, you know. My kids will occasionally ask me, like, is sure. my dad famous? And the answer is no, not really. Like, he's famous when you're at the hotel where the conference that he's speaking at is happening.
Yeah.
He's not famous when he comes to town and we just, like, go to dinner Hendersonville, Tennessee, where we can go any. I mean, he will occasionally get recognized, but it's, you know, it's somebody coming up and just going, you know, hey, Pastor John, really appreciate your books, that kind of thing. That's not famous. Famous is I can't walk into the grocery store. I can't you know, I can't get my own oil changed. I can't do normal people things. And like Matt Chandler and my dad are, my dad's probably more well known, just frankly, but numerically. But yeah, so for him to post his kids, like his kids can function in life without being recognized everywhere they go. Now, if they go to a Christian college and somebody goes, Chandler, are you any relation to Matt?
Yeah.
Okay, that's their bubble. But he's not putting his kids at risk of a weird life because of this, because the level of fame just isn't that high.
Hmm. Yeah, that's true. Is the kid Big R, and you'll know this, is the kid like in the business? Is he like writing a book about, I don't know, do hard things as a young person? Is he writing a book on dating but not dating?
No,
is he in the business?
I haven't seen any of him being in the business. All I've seen ever posted about him is just he seems kind of like the really, you know, like the just the, you know, the long hair.
Yeah, I think he's an athlete. He's just kind of the all-American kid who seems to be living like the good high school
he's got
life.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, he's got affluence all over him. You can tell when two affluent people get together and make a kid. There's just a different look. He's got that for sure.
Okay, quick all right, point.
So
on that.
Let's
I'm
get back to the
sure
karate
Max Chandler
aspect
has a
of
white
this.
Belt, which means that he just started.
Oh, maybe I didn't study the. Let's go back to the.
I thought maybe white I just around wasn't his waist. He's a beginner. This isn't like him being Mr. Miyagi. This is like him studying under Mr. Miyagi.
Dude, you're right. He's a white belt. He is a beginner, and he's got a. I'm studying the picture now more. He's got a taped up finger, so it looks like he got a little injured in combat. He's got tape around his foot. Like for a white belt, he's taking a beating. Well,
he's also Matty Chan, I don't know, 46
he's definitely got some injury
or something, which means that when you hurt yourself, it takes 4 weeks to heal. So, you know,
yeah.
Yeah, he's in
that's
pain
a grimace,
right now,
not
boys.
A smile.
He's in a lot of pain. He's pushing 50. He's in a lot of pain.
Dude, I think his kid has high upside in the business. That's all I'm saying. If I was Wolgs, if I was our agent, I would sign the kid. I'd make a little speculative run, just bet on the upside. You know what I mean? He'd be like plus 1,200 on DraftKings to do like a book with Crossway in the next decade.
I mean,
but
the
I'd throw 100 bucks on that.
That's the thing about being like that kind of a kid is you usually are pretty polarized, mm-hmm. man. You either go all the way in or you go as far the other way as humanly possible, right? So we have no idea.
Yeah.
We have no idea I'm not saying anything about a spiritual state. I'm saying like he might just be like, dude, I just want to sell insurance. I watching my dad do this stuff all these years. There's no way, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going all the way.
You
in.
Think he's all the
I'm,
way
I'm
in?
Buying,
like,
I'm
you
buying
think he's
some
the
shares.
Next pastor of the Lee pastor yeah. of the village.
What's his name? What's his name? Brendan or you? Somebody said it. Reed. I'm buying some Reed
you know,
shares.
I gotta say, I feel a weird sense of like betrayal.
Hitting
right
my
now.
Broker up after we.
I feel like I'm betraying this poor kid. I'm like, this is he's. We're in the same fraternity, and I'm.
Yeah.
And I'm
oh yeah.
Breaking
being
the
famous
rules right now.
Yeah.
All the best to him and his future as a bond salesman.
Yeah. This is though. Oh no, definitely, dude. Of course, all the best, and obviously we're just having some fun with this. But this is kind of, in a weird macro way, like the fruit of posting anything on the internet, right? So like, you post a picture of yourself in a dojo, or you post a picture of yourself on a fishing boat, or with your heads of cattle, or whatever, and like, you, okay, this is where I want to hear you, Big R. You want people to notice it, right? So, like, you don't post it going, geez, oh my gosh, I hope no one notices this. I hope it goes unnoticed. You know, so that's, like, antithetical to the whole idea of posting something. So you want people to notice it, but you don't want people to probably talk about it the way we're talking about it, or worse.
I mean, this is pretty G-rated, guys.
But
I think we're okay. I mean, no, we're not killing anybody's
character. I think we're fine. Yeah, we're fine, and we're...
Yeah.
No, and we, of course, we want the best for the kid and all that. But, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What do you think, baby?
Yeah, I mean, now we're, that's just a bigger conversation about, you know, which we've talked about before, which is just, you know, Instagram and, like, why are we putting ourselves out there? What is the, I mean, is that social engagement? Is that a way? I mean, dude, Matty Chan is not he hardly ever posts anything, which is kind of interesting about him. He's not really, I would say, a social media guy. I don't know. He might be looking at stuff all day. He hardly ever posts anything. And so I don't know if this is just his way of, you know, I don't know. You know, maybe this is his way of, like, for his congregation, it's a way of, you know, kind of humanizing some of his kind of maybe exaggerated celebrity. And saying, hey, I'm just a dad at the end of the day doing some karate lessons with my kid. Everybody relax.
Which is cool. To be fair, like I'm all in on stuff like that.
Yeah, I think
it's
so.
Very
that,
cool.
So that might be, I just, you know, to have a conversation with him and say, here's the thing, dude, you hardly ever post. And every once in a while you post and it's usually about, like, you know, nature photos on vacation with your family. I mean, is that just kind of showing everybody what you're up to and kind of humanizing yourself, normalizing yourself? I don't know, you know.
It seems to me that, you know,
it's weird.
Every prominent person has to, you have to kind of think through what you put online. Like, there's sort of a curation in your mind of why and how. What I see from Matt Chandler is a very intentional, like, he doesn't tweet. He's not delving into all, like, the Twitter morass. He uses Instagram fairly regularly, but it's always just, like, stuff that he enjoys. his family, time away in nature, hunting, you know, in this case, karate or jiu-jitsu or whatever it is. And so it's always just sort of like a quick sneak peek into like, hey, I have a life outside of being a talking head. And I respect that. Like, it's not curated in terms of my life is perfect, because you just know like all you're getting is this little slice. This is stuff that I enjoy. And yeah. And so it's not like, I'm sure he wants people to see it, but it's not like a marketing tool for him. Like, he doesn't promote his own books. He doesn't promote anybody else's stuff. It's just me at the Brazos River, me with my family, me, you know, getting a white belt and breaking my pinky finger or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's just interesting to me. Like, I guess I've been out of the social media game for so long. Like, I have a hard time even thinking through how I would handle it. But even like the pictures of kids thing being one of those issues that like 20 years ago you would have never thought that you would have to have a perspective on it. But I guess you do now. Boys, let's take a break. And then we'll come back and literally just wrap the show because we have one more minute. All right, we're back. Boys, we've done what we always do on this program, which is wander to and fro throughout a weird reform statistic and Matt Chandler's karate pictures. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
Hey there, it's Carly Mercoulier, host of Therapy and Theology, a weekly podcast that explores popular topics and questions related to faith, feelings, and spiritual formation. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.